Morning, everyone. Today's Daf is Kol Daf Hey. We're on Daf Dalad Amud Aleph, and we are a little bit past the Mishnah. Yesterday, we started the Mishnah on the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis, and we spoke about extracting Mashkon, extracting collateral, meaning somebody joined the 25th day of Adar, only 5 days to go into the new fiscal year. People are not late, but certainly looks like they're going to be late with their shekel payment. So the Beis HaMikdash has the right to collect a mashkan, to collect a collateral against your obligation, so that you'll pay. And then the Mishnah went on to describe the collecting monies, donations from non-Jews. That's going to be a big part of today's discussion. And then the Mishnah spoke about the kalbon. Kalbon, we'll come back to later today. I'll go back, I'll review what we learned yesterday regarding the kalbon, and we will explore this idea of the kalbon a little bit more over the course of today. And God willing, today we'll finish the parak. We'll finish the first parak of Shkalim. And even better, we'll start the second parak of Shkalim. Okay, we're on Dal Amud Aleph, and I'm going to start again right after the Mishnah. I know we did it yesterday, but just to take a quick step backwards so we could take a step forwards. Alpha P Sha'amru Halad Voin Tovin Hacha Atamar Tovin Hacha At Amart Ain Tovin. Kankish Heavy Basaris, Kancho Bushalo Heavy Basaris, like we described yesterday. When it comes to the katan, when it comes to the minor, so the minor under the age of 13 has no obligation to give whatsoever. Meaning neither do we take a collateral against a minor, that goes without saying, but more than that, there's not even a request on the behalf of the minor. Once you reach 13 years of age, so then he's no longer a minor, he's a gadol, he has an obligation to give. But this is a financial obligation, and although, strictly speaking, he's going to give, but at that point in time, there's no mashkon, there's no enforcement of the giving. In other words, basically, between 13 and 20 years of age, basically, you're obligated, but we're not enforcing. And then after 20 years of age, so as we discussed yesterday, so then there's full enforcement, meaning that's when we start being mamashke. That's when the Beis HaMikdash starts taking collateral against that obligation. So as we described yesterday, but just quickly to review, under the age of 13, no obligation. Between 13 and 20, obligated but not enforced. After 20 years of age, enforced. Hanachri v'akutsa v'chulei. And then we go on in the Gemara and we speak about the Nachri and the Kutsi. Amar Rabbi Bati Pater Kamandam Kutsi Kenachri. How do you understand our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says, you know what we take from the Kusim? Nothing. You don't take obligations. You don't take karbanos. You take nothing from the Kusi. Our Mishnah seems to be of the opinion that a Kusi is the status of a Nachri. We discussed this yesterday. The Kusi historically is a group of non-Jews who were imported into Eretz Yisrael, eventually converted, and their conversion was questionable, whether it was a sincere conversion or a forced conversion. And as I described yesterday, that was a machlokus that raged for centuries in terms of what their status was. Our Mishnah seems to be taking a position which is that they're like non-Jews. Why? Because if you read the Mishnah says, we don't take anything from them, no types of karbanos from them. So the Gemara says, the Itpalgan Kusi Kenachri Divrei Ebner. Gemara notes that this is a machlokus. What exactly is the status of a Kusi? According to Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, a Kusi has the status of a Nachri, he's like a non-Jew, which actually makes sense, meaning that it fits into our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah, of course, all the Mishnahs were edited by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Now, not always do we find that the Mishnahs go like Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. He'll very often just ignore his own position and accept what he feels is a majority position. But on this issue, though, it's okay. Our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Amer Kusi Ki Yisrael Echol Davar. No, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel disagrees with Rabbi. He said a Kusi is like a Jew. In other words, a conversion is considered a good conversion. So here we go. Machlokas between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. As I pointed out yesterday, this is after Churban Bayit Sheni. And the Kusim were introduced into Israel during Bayis Rishon. So we're talking half a millennia, at least 500 years, where you had Kusim and Eretz Yisrael. So this is a very, very long and old debate in terms of their status. Am Rabbi Lazar Mastisin Kenachriim, Haba Kusim Lo. So Rabbi Lazar says, I think the Mishnah is speaking specifically about Nachriim, but not Kusim. Utni Ken, and I'll show you a brisa that this is so. Why? What does the brisa say? So again, we go to the beginning of Parshas Vayikra, Sefer Vayikra, Parshas Vayikra, where the Torah talks about people bringing voluntary karbanos, karban ola, karban shlamim. The first parak is talking about karban ola. And what does the Torah over there say? Adam ki akriv mikem. And the Gemara is going to darshan two words. Adam is just any individual. The rabbi says a gerim, even converts. Converts can also contribute and bring a karban. Mikem lahotzim et hamomrim. But if you're a mumrim, somebody who is religiously off the reservation, so he can't bring a karban. So now the Braisa is really not all that clear about what its position is regarding kusi, meaning the Braisa, all the Braisa says is that Adam is coming to include a ger. So, but what the Gemara's understanding is, and it gets a little bit choppy over here, but I think the Gemara's understanding over here is that this is also talking about a kusi as well, and the kusi can bring a karban. So in other words, when the Mishnah talked about kusi, it wasn't speaking about kusi in relationship to a karban. A kusi is like a Jew, a kusi can bring a karban. When the Mishnah talks about the kusi and nachri, when the Mishnah says that we don't accept monies from them, that's only speaking about the Nachri, not about the Ikusi. So, Masisim Pligi al Rebbe Lazar. So the Gemara says, I'll show you a Braisa that goes against the position of Rebbe Lazar. The Braisa says, Emekabim miyadam kani zavim vizavos, kani yoldos. So you're not allowed to accept from them the karbanos of a zavar, or a yoledes. That's our Mishnah. Now, what's even the thinking over here? Meaning, there's a non-Jew doesn't have in his vocabulary the terms like Zav and Zava and Yoledes. That's just not in the vocabulary. So when the Mishnah says, oh, you know what, we're not going to take these types of karbanos, it's not even talking about a Nachri, they just don't even have in their vocabulary. So that means then that we know that the first part of the Mishnah, when it was describing not to accept karbanos, was talking about the kusi. The second part of the Mishnah, when it talks about not taking money, that's talking about a nachri. So the Gemara says, Reisha b'nachrim v'sefa b'kusim. So the beginning part of the Mishnah is talking about nachri, and the end part of the Mishnah is talking about kusi, meaning, can we do that? Can we separate a Mishnah in two different subjects? So the Gemara says, yeah, in this case we'll do it. Kenu reisha b'nachrim v'sefa b'kusim. Yes, the beginning's talking about a nachri, and the end of the Mishnah is talking about a kusi. Okay. Amar of Yochanan. All right. So that, basically, like we described yesterday, when the Mishnah introduces kusi into the discussion, so the first debate is a kusi a Jew or not a Jew, subject to a machlokis? It seems like our Mishnah is taking the position they're not a Jew. That's the way to read the Mishnah. Possibly, even our Mishnah is of the position that a kusi is a Jew. And just in other words, but because of his lack of religious integrity or his beliefs, so therefore he can't bring a karban. Okay, two possibilities in terms of how to understand the Mishnah. Okay, now we move on to an interesting topic, certainly one that would be sensitive, and that is, can we accept monies from non-Jews to build the Beit HaMikdash? There really are two questions over here. One is accepting monies to build the Beit HaMikdash. Two, accepting monies to upkeep the Beit HaMikdash. And then I'm going to add one other layer to the question, which is going to come up in the Gemara, and that is, can we make any distinction between accepting monies versus accepting actual objects, items? So in other words, let's say they want to donate a menorah to the shul. Okay, I know I'm giving a modern example, but right? In other words, but what the Gemara refers to as a davar mesuyim. Is there any distinction between just giving them money, which monies obviously will be transferred into something, either operational costs or capital campaign, or the Mishnah is only talking about davar mesuyim, something very specific. Okay, so let's just review what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. What we saw yesterday in the Mishnah is that Ezra said no, meaning going back to the beginning of the Bais Sheni, the building of the Second Temple. So the non-Jews came over to Ezra and said, we'd like to participate. Can we participate in the building of the Beis HaMikdash? And Ezra said to them, no. That's straight out of the Pesukim. And the Mishnah quoted just one snippet of the incident over there. You look at the bottom of the previous Amud. Lo lachem v'lanu livnos Beis Elokeinu. It's not for you and us to build Beis Elokeinu. So Ezra said to them, no, you cannot give. So it doesn't give us a lot of information. All it tells us is, that was a startup cost. That was for the building of the Beit HaMikdash. And Ezra said no. Doesn't really give us a lot of information in terms of the general attitude of can we accept money or can we not accept money. Okay, so what we have is our Mishnah. Now, but mind you, by the way, and I'm sorry, an important point. The Mishnah, although the Mishnah quotes the Pasuk in Ezra, the Mishnah seems to be talking on a very general basis, because the Mishnah made the point that, let me give you the general rule. If it's a neder, if it's an adava, that's fine. But if it's not neder or nedava, you can't accept. Meaning the Mishnah seems to be speaking very broadly about, no, we don't take money from them, period. So although the Mishnah quotes the Pasuk in Ezra, the Mishnah seems to be extending it to a very general conclusion. Let's now go to our Gemara. Our Gemara on Dalet Amud Aleph. We are right in the middle of the Amud, starting with the words Amar Rav Yochanan, smack in the middle of the Amud. Three last words of the line. B'tchilei mekabla mehem lo davar mesuyim v'lo davar shein mesuyim. So Rav Yochanan says like this: if it's startup, if it's building, right? That's with the b'tchila. B'tchila means we're building. So when we're building the base of Mikdash, so then we accept nothing from the non-Jew. No contribution for the non-Jew to build the base ha Mikdash. And although he doesn't explain why, but the Tiklin Chadatin and generally speaking, the Mefarshim say the reason why is because in the building, the serious concern would be that they're going to have a say in how the building is going, both in terms of how we're going to build and also in terms of the timeline as well. In fact, that's exactly what happened by Ezra. They started building the base of Mikdash, and then the Persian government told them to stop, and then they stopped, and then the story of Purim. And okay, so in other words, when it comes to the actual construction to the building, so there, Rav Yochanan says to accept no money from them, neither funds nor specific items. However, of itself, but after the building's been built, and now we're just talking about upkeep. So the mekabla mehem davar shein mesuyim, mekabla mehem davar mesuyim. So then certainly, if they want to donate funds, that they can do, but they cannot offer anything specific, meaning any items what they're going to put up and say, hey, look what I donated over there. Good. That's the opinion of Rav Yochanan. Okay, we'll come back to that in just a moment. And then his brother-in-law, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Amar, bein betchila, bein besof, and mekabla mehem lo davar mesuyim, v'lo davar shein mesuyim. So Reish Lakish is a hardliner. He says, never do we accept money from them. Not on the building, not on the upkeep, not funds, not davar mesuyim. Reish Lakish says simply, no. We never accept money from a non-Jew for neither the building nor the continued upkeep of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay. Masin Simpliga, Rav Yochanan. The Mishnah seems to be going against Rav Yochanan. Why? Because Ein Mekabel Mehem Hektish Unadav LaBedek HaBayis. I'm sorry, I say our Mishnah. No, this is a Braisa. Okay. We'll come back to our Mishnah in just a moment. But the Braisa says, Ein Mekabel Mehem Hektish Unadav LaBedek HaBayis, that you do not accept Hektish Unadav, any gifts from them, for Bedek HaBayis. Bedek HaBayis means temple upkeep. Okay? So the Braisa seems to sound like Reish Lakish. The Braisa sounds like we just simply don't accept money from them, not only for construction, but even for temple upkeep. Good. So what is Rav Yochanan going to do with that Braisa? So the Gemara gives one of two possibilities. Number one, Pater Law, he'll resolve the Braisa, Bein Betchila, Bein Besof, Vavavah, Davar Mesuyim. Could be that the Braisa is speaking about specific items, meaning not funds, but actual items. That Rav Yochanan says you'll never accept from a non-Jew. You don't want to hoist something up that was donated by a non-Jew. It's just not respectful for the base of Mikdash. So therefore, that's what the Bryce is talking about. But if it were funds, the Bryce would be okay with that. And again, not at the building, but at the upkeep, at the point of upkeep. That's one possible solution. Another possible solution, now we have it in parentheses. Normally we skip the parentheses. But these aren't really parentheses, meaning to skip. This is another girsa of the Gemara we just read, meaning the Yerushalmi, which, you know, is as we're going through it, we see that it's not as well edited as the Bavli. So even in the Gemara itself, there are two different girsos in terms of how it should go. We have girsa issues in the Bavli as well. I mean, I don't want to. The Bavli is not, you know, to us from our perspective, not, you know, there seems to be. You know, editing issues in the Bavli, just trying to say, think of how to say it politely. But in other words, the Yerushalmi seems to be more glaring. Anyway, another presentation, Pasol Abim Mesum, Shafilo Ma'osav, Yolacham Liyama Melech. Or maybe, according to this other version, we're talking about at the onset, and on the onset, so there we accept no monies whatsoever, not funds, not davar mesuyim, and maybe that's what the Bryce is speaking about, and if so, so then, again, Rav Yochanan would be fine with that as well. Rav Yochanan, at the upkeep, would be able to accept money. It's, okay, fine. Well, we'll leave it at that. Okay, Reish Lakish, Amar, Bein B'tchil, Bein B'sof, and Mekam, Amal, Davar Mesuyam, fine. So we then move on to the position of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is our hardliner. He says that we're not allowed to accept any funds whatsoever for the Beis HaMikdash, neither on the building end nor on the upkeep end, not even funds, nothing. So the Gemara says, "Masisim pliga Reish Ben Lakish, didni akol shavin shein nojim v'nidarim." So the Gemara says, "I'll quote a Mishnah." And the Mishnah seems to be going against Reish Lakish. Now, I know we just quoted a brice against Rav Yochanan, so and Rav Yochanan answered, so we're going to do the same thing for Reish Lakish. We're going to quote another brice, which seems to be against Reish Lakish, and that is Noder V'Nidar. Now, Noder V'Nidar, Noder means, I'm going to dedicate something to the Beis HaMikdash. Nidar means, I'll be the subject of a dedication. Somebody wants to give, let's say, my value to the Beis HaMikdash. So this is Nodar V'Nidar. So Patola Ola. So Reish Lakish says, that's not talking about money. That's talking about a carbon. A carbon a non-Jew is allowed to bring. Non-Jew can bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. We'll speak more about it in a second. That's what the Brice is talking about. There's no problem. Meaning funds, no. Carbon, yes. Nicha, I'm sorry, so the Gemara says, Patola Ola. Nicha Nodrin Ola Nidar. I'm sorry. Nicha Nodrin Ola. Nidarin Ola. So the Gemara asks, I don't understand. We have two terms that we're using over here. One's Noder, and the other's Nidar. Noder means that I can make something holy, which is great. Meaning, if we're talking about a carbon, that I understand. So what he'll do is he'll dedicate a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. Nidar, how does that work? Meaning Nidar usually means you're not going to make something Kadosh, but you'll be the subject of Kedusha, which means that somebody will point to you and say, I'm going to give his value. So the Gemara says, how does that work if we're talking about a non-Jew? Ela Kishama Yisrael Harei Alai Ola. So the Gemara presents a scenario where we could even be talking about a carbon in the context of Nidar. Could be, says the Gemara, that we're, somebody offered a Jew or was there offering a Ola. V'shamanachmin, the Nachri overheard, v'amar masha amar zalai. I'll have what he's having. So in other words, so now the non-Jew is obligating himself, but not he's not the one initiating it, meaning he's just simply following what he overheard the Jew say. So on one hand, we could use the terminology of nidar, because he's the subject of it. On the other hand, In other words, it's not that somebody's giving his value, it's just he's mimicking what a Jew is offering. So that is how we can suggest the language of Nidar would work and still just leave the whole discussion to a carbon. Okay, quickly to summarize, two opinions in terms of accepting donations from a non-Jew for the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Yochanan says, at building, nothing. At upkeep, you can accept funds, but not davar misuya. Reish Lakish says, no monies whatsoever, not funds, not objects, neither at building nor at upkeep. Brisa seemed to be going against both positions, and the Gemara defended and deflected the Brisas. The Eino Mevi Imo Nesachim. More questions the Gemara asks, and that is the following. Oh, this is not a statement, this is a question. I apologize. Eino Mevi Imo Nesachim. Now, let's go with our thinking. A non-Jew is going to bring a carbon. And when the Brisa says that he's going to be no there, it means he's bringing a carbon. Fine. Now, together with the carbon is also what comes with that is nesachim. Nesachim, wine, oil, and flour that comes together with every carbon. And now what the non-Jew is going to do is he's going to also not only bring a carbon, but have to pay for the wine, oil, and flour that is accessorizing every carbon. Now, with the oil, wine, and flour, there's going to always be a little bit extra, like a little surplus. It's what we refer to as most our nesachim. So what happens now with that little surplus is it's skimmed off the top. The Beis HaMikdash skims it off the top. And then with the surplus oil and the surplus flour and the surplus wine, they basically then end up selling it at one point or another. And they use it to buy things for the Beis HaMikdash. So, right, there's all these different revenue streams that we'll be talking about over the course of this Masechta that come to the Beis HaMikdash. This happens to be one of those revenue streams. So to which the Gemara wanders, so let me get this straight. The non-Jew is bringing carbon. Additionally, he's also going to be bringing nesachim. And with nesachim, there's always going to be a little bit of surplus. So essentially, the non-Jew is going to be contributing to the Beis HaMikdash. So according to Rav Yochanan, it's not a big deal. We're talking at the point of upkeep. That's fine. The problem is, according to Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish says, we never accept any contribution, any monetary contribution from them. So how does the most Nesachim work? How does the surplus Nesachim work? So the Gemara asked the question, Lo l'kli shareis inon, are they not going to kli shareis? Meaning, the monies will be used for kli shareis, nimsa mevi davar mesuyam, and now they're going to be bringing a davar mesuyam. And I was wrong, meaning I thought the question was only against Reish Lakish. The Gemara is presenting the question even according to Rav Yochanan, because essentially now what they're doing is that they're going to take monies and use it to buy specific objects. So Hesiv Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Bon, v'hatanina ne'erachin v'orchin. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's review what we learned all the way back in Erchin. All the way back in Erchin, the very beginning of the Masechta, what we learned together is that non-Jews can also make Erech donations. Erech donations, without getting into the details, is money. So the Mishnah in Erchin tells us that we can accept money from a non-Jew. So once again, how are the Amoraim going to deal with that Mishnah in Erchin? So lo lebedek abaisinan, hech ma da'at amar taman, what are we going to say over there? L'shamayim u'mitkavein, u'me'eleihen hein ba'in. Lebedek abais kein at omer, afhach l'shamayim u'mitkavein, u'me'eleihen hein ba'im lebedek abais. Okay. Essentially what the Gemara answers is like this. It's a tough answer. I'll try my best. But basically what the Gemara's answer is like this. Reish Lakish will tell you we never accept monies from a non-Jew, period. Not during the construction, not during the upkeep. Not davar mesuyim, not specific items, and not monies as well. Okay, our biggest stumbling block right now is that Mishnah Erechin. The Mishnah Erechin says that we accept money from them. Meaning, they want to make an Erech donation to the Beis HaMikdash, by all means, go ahead. Do it. So, Reish Lakish, how is he learning that Mishnah Erechin? So, essentially what the Gemara is now arguing is that they're not directly giving the money to the Beis HaMikdash. Meaning, they had a religious moment in their life. They wanted to pledge money to God. Meaning, I just simply want to give the money to God. Right? The language of the Gemara is, L'shamayim hum et kavein. He's interested in just giving it to God. Here, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you're the source of all money. You're the source of all funds. I don't know if he's going to be saying Kadosh Baruch Hu, but either way. You're the source of everything, and I just want to give you money. So he's not giving it to the Beis HaMikdash, he's simply dedicating it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then what happens is, now what do? So he calls the Beis HaMikdash, he says, look, I got monies here, they are, as far as I'm concerned, they're dedicated monies. Not donated monies, but dedicated monies. What do you want to do with it? They stay right there, they come over, they pick it up. And basically now, what the Gemara is explaining or arguing is that it's not viewed as a donation, it's viewed simply as a collection of monies that were dedicated. So the Gemara says, that's how you understand the Mishnah Erechin, and once you understand the Mishnah Erechin, that's basically what you're going to be saying regarding the surplus Nesachim as well. Yes, there's going to be a little bit of oil and wine being skimmed off the top, and yes, that monies are going to be going to the Beis HaMikdash. But that's not a donation, that's just simply a collection. Their primary purpose was just simply to give money to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. L'shamayim hu mitkavein, and then that money gets collected. I realize that it's a subtlety, it's a real subtlety on the part of the Gemara in terms of this answer, but That's essentially how the Gemara is trying to explain it on behalf of Reish Lakish. Yes.
Why isn't the yayin a problem for the court?
So what he'll probably do is, right, it's a good question, what he'll probably do is he won't actually bring the wine, he'll pay money. And the Beis HaMikdash will be the one supplying the wine. Okay. Which, generally speaking, by the way, in the Beis HaMikdash, as we'll talk over our Masechta, that's generally speaking how karbanos work. Meaning, a woman had to bring a karban, so she didn't actually pick up the birds and bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. You could do it, but it was a little more sterile. In other words, usually what happens is she just gave money, she put the money in a box, and then the Kohanim understood, okay, we're going to now bring Karbanos on her behalf. So I assume same thing by the non-Jew as well. Yeah, in other words, correct. But the leftovers are Kodesh, but Kodesh meaning not carbon Kodesh, but value Kodesh. Right? Kedushas Damim. And so they'll sell it. And the proceeds will go to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, Ma'avid. I'm sorry, Lebedek Abayis. Okay, Ma'avid La Rabbi Shimon Gamil. Sorry, I'm on the very top of Dalet Amud Beis, and we're continuing the Gemara, and we're going to wrap up now this discussion of Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish and can we accept money from a non-Jew? Ma avala Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish partala lo lachem lanu livnos base elokeinu. So the Gemara says, what's the source of Reish Lakish? The pasuk in Ezra. Okay, I'm admitting it's difficult to understand. Meaning that pasuk in Ezra is the source for Reish Lakish. Hard to understand. The pasuk in Ezra is talking about the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, meaning open up the Ezra and you'll read inside and you'll see. It's all talking about the building of the Beis HaMikdash, not the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. So, and the Gemara just simply, flatly says, you know, that's the source of Reish Lakish. So I'm admitting it's very hard to understand why that should be the source for Reish Lakish. If anything, it sounds more like a source for Rav Yochanan, that it's at the building that you can't accept monies from them, but after that point in time, you can. Right, the pasuk says, "Lo lachem v'lanu live notes beis elokeinu." Okay, so I'm admitting the Gemara is hard to understand. I don't fully understand the Gemara, and we're going to move on. That's what we do in the daf, right? If we're in yeshiva, we'll obviously sit. We'll sit on this line of the Gemara much longer. Rav Chizkiya Amar Rabbi Siman Shal Me'ata Emekabla Mehem Lamas Amayim Ulechomas Eiru Miglasa Al Shem Shenemar V'lachem Ein Chelak. And the Gemara points out that it's not just the quote unquote the holy items of the Beis HaMikdash, but the truth of the matter is any part and aspect of the Beis HaMikdash they simply cannot contribute. So the Gemara gives a number of examples of like things that they can't contribute towards. Amas Amayim. There's a canal in the middle of the Azara that runs through the middle of the Azara, where so that when all the blood and all the other wonderful juices are in the, on the floor of the base of the Azara of the temple courtyard, so now what they'll do is they'll just simply flood the courtyard. All that will go through into the canal and out of the Azara. So it's a necessary component just for the functioning of the Beis HaMikdash. They can't contribute that. The Chalma Sa'ir, the walls of the city, Migdalah, the towers of the city. In other words, no part of the Beis HaMikdash. And interesting, by the way, it sounds like we're talking about Chalma and Migdal. It sounds like all of Yerushalayim. It cannot contribute. Okay. We are going to skip. Okay, the next five lines of Gemara now are in parentheses. We're going to skip those five lines, and we're going to start now Masnisen de Rebbe Meir. Okay. Clear? No, but that's fine. Masnisen de Rebbe Meir, right after the parentheses. Okay, let's backtrack. Let's review what we learned yesterday. There's a surcharge. Every Jew has an obligation to give a machzis, a shekel, the half shekel. And with that machzis ha-shekel, there's a surcharge. What's the purpose of that surcharge? So as I explained yesterday, but I'm going to reiterate right now, it's subject to a debate amongst the Tanaim what the exact purpose of that surcharge is. We'll start off with the Tanna Kamma. The Tanna Kamma says the surcharge is just simply to compensate possible loss. Because look, here's what's going to happen. Two people, right? Ben's not here today, but he's coming. Not promising. But he's listening. That I know. So Ben and I yesterday came as a joint venture, and what did the two of us do? The two of us gave a sell. A sell is equivalent to two half shekels. Okay, and what's going to end up happening now is that they're going to have to change. In other words, they're going to have to take the sell and change it into two half shekels. And in the month of Adar, the demand for the half shekel obviously increased because everybody needs a half shekel. So the half shekel, its value actually is just a slight bit greater. So if Ben and I are giving a selah instead of the two half shekels, so actually we're going to be diminishing the value that the Beis HaMikdash is receiving. Therefore, the Tanna Kamma explained to us yesterday in the Mishnah, we're going to have to bring a kalbon. The kalbon is there too, is to make up for that possible loss. That's the Tanna Kamma's viewpoint. And then what we saw yesterday is Rebbe Meir. What did Rebbe Meir say? You always give a kalbon. It has nothing to do with possible loss, although I'm going to qualify that in just a second. But in other words, it's not. It doesn't matter whether we come as a partner, whether we come as individuals. It doesn't matter if I'm bringing a machitzis. I owe for every single person who brings a machitzis a shekel, a kalbon must be given. Therefore, according to Rebbe Meir, if Ben and I are bringing a selah, so how many kalbons do we need to bring? Two kalbons, one for me, one for him. I'm giving a machitzis a shekel. He's giving a machitzis a shekel. So therefore, the kalbon, the surcharge comes on. How? I'll explain better in just a second. The Gemara is going to ask you a very question.
How many is saying that it's only for because of exchange? So if somebody brings half a shekel, why should you give?
No need.
Or he doesn't need?
No, according to the Tanakhama, no need. Right, in other words, if I'm bringing a maksa to shekel, I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to do. That's exactly the amount of money the Torah asked me to give. So I'm doing it. Only because we're giving a stela, and then there's that the potential loss, so then we're going to have to make up for that potential loss. Okay, and Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim, Rabbi Meir. Okay, we're going to, let's go. Okay, let's go. We are in the Gemara. I skipped all those parentheses. Masisin de Rabbi Meir de Amar Rabbi Meir. No, I'm wrong. We're not going to skip. Okay, we're gonna do it. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm confused, and you hear my confusion, but we're gonna go back. We're gonna read it. Elu chayav mekabon tani. Elu chayav mekabon echad. Rabbi Meir omer shnei kabonos. Okay, according to the Tanakhama, one kabon, and according to Rabbi Meir, two kabons. Masisin de Rabbi Meir de Amar Rabbi Meir alfa pishein shiklu. Afa pishein shiklo Torah kabbana Torah savra mer b'misha shaklo shalom shu pater meha kabon. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe I shouldn't have read it. Anyway, I'm sorry. Masisin de Rameir de Amar Rameir kishem shaklo Torah kach kabbano Torah. Yeah. Stick with your first guess. Should have skipped it. Okay, they're right. Now at least I'm understanding. Rabbi Meir says, just like the shekels minat Torah, so is the kabbon. Right, like I explained yesterday. Now we see the Gemara actually saying it. According to Rabbi Meir, the Torah is demanding of us to give a shekel. Now remember, I told you yesterday, whenever we see the word shekel, that means machatz, it's a shekel. In the time of the Mishnah, the half shekel of the Torah was called a shekel. I know that's confusing, but just as long as we know it, we won't be confused. The shekels min haTorah, the kalbon's min haTorah. The Torah also demands a surcharge as well. So that means that according to Rabbi Meir, that if I give a full shekel, I'm also obligated to bring a kalbon. And now the Gemara is going to give us an explanation for Rabbi Meir. Now, even after reading the Gemara and explaining the Gemara, we're still going to have to try to understand a little bit better. What the Gemara says is, you know what's the basis for Rabbi Meir? The basis for Rabbi Meir is the pasuk in the Torah. Well, that and also the Torah Shabbat Peh, the oral tradition that was given to us in conjunction. Meaning, Moshe went to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, let's go the other way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to Moshe and said, every Jew's got to give a machzis a shekel. So Moshe says, well, what is that? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, zeh, this. And you'll see time and again throughout the Torah, whenever you see the word zeh, there's a physical representation of the item. Meaning it's not just Kadosh Baruch Hu just simply said this, but rather zeh yitnu, you will give this. And Hashem demonstrated visually what exactly is the machatzis ha-shekel. What did Hashem demonstrate? So then Gemara says, kemin matbeya shel esh hotziya Kadosh Baruch Hu mitachas kisei kvodo. So he takes out a matbeya shel esh, a coin made out of fire, and showed it to Moshe. Va'amar lo zeh yitnu. This is what you're going to give. Okay, period. Now we understand? No, not perfectly. Meaning, so what does that mean? And it cannot mean that now every one of us has got to bring a coin made out of fire. Because I'm pretty sure that most of us cannot procure a coin made out of fire. So what exactly does that mean? And why is this supportive of the opinion of Rav Meir? Where Rav Meir says, well, you see, Torah demands that you bring a machatzis, a shekel, and the kabbon as well. What does that have to do with the coin of fire that Hashem showed Moshe? So perhaps, and this is a suggestion, it's not, again, the Gemara, that's all the Gemara says. So at this point in time, we have to speculate. So perhaps what the Gemara means by that is the following. That what the Torah is telling us is it has to be pure. Absolutely pure. Now the Torah represents it by saying, matbeah shel esh, right, the coin made out of fire. But in other words, it has to be pure silver. As I explained already a number of times, back in the good old days, currencies were, the value of the currency was the metal content therein. So in other words, a coin was a value because it was a silver coin. A coin was a value because it was gold. Now we know that it's not perfectly pure. There are going to be impurities in the metal. So basically what the Torah is saying is as follows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can procure a coin made out of fire, meaning it's perfectly pure, with 100% silver content. We can't do that. In other words, it's just not physically possible. So therefore, there is a Torah expectation, not a rabbinic expectation, but rather a Torah expectation that we're going to give the machitzas a shekel, which is a silver coin, and we're going to give a surcharge, because it's understood that every silver coin is going to, by definition, have impurities. To make up for those impurities, we're going to have to bring a kavanah as well. Period. So in other words, and there never can be a situation where you're not going to give the kavanah. According to Rav Meir, you're always going to give the kavanah. That perhaps, I'm saying perhaps, is what the Gemara means when it says that it's all based on the pasuk and the drash of matbea shalish. Okay. We go on. We're in the middle of Dalamud Beis. Nasan selalito shekel chai shnei kalbanos. Okay, here we get to a part of the Mishnah which admittedly is a tough part to the Mishnah. And the Mishnah says as follows. Let's say now we're not talking two people, we're talking one person. I give a full selah to the Beis HaMikdash. Selah is valued at 2 machzitz a shekel. So, now what do I want? I want my change. Fine. So what do I get in exchange? I get my machzitz a shekel back. Fine. Then the Mishnah says, and you know what you also have to now do? You have to bring 2 kalbanos. Good. What? two kalbanos. Wait a second. I'm paying for one person. I'm paying for just me. And I'm giving a selah. And I'm getting a machzitz a shekel in exchange. And I have to pay 2 kalbanos? So as we went through the Mishnah yesterday, I pointed out, that's a tough line in the Mishnah. So now I'm just going to reiterate, that's a tough line in the Mishnah. How do you understand that? What I'm doing one transaction, I have to pay 2 kalbanos? 2 surcharges? So the Gemara tries to identify. So Rabbi Lazar, the Amora, says, I'll explain this part of the Mishnah, this line of the Mishnah, it's going like Rabbi Meir. Okay, so let's see if we can figure it out. Well, actually, we could just read it inside. So, De Rebbe Meir, now once again, Girsa issues over here. The, what do I do? I'll read it as the Gra. It tells us to read it. So it's going to be a little bit different than as you see it in the Gemara. You can look at Ozdal in the Gra, and you can see how he reads this next line of the Gemara. Rebbe Meir, Echad Shekel, Shu Nosin, Ve'echel, Divrei Torah. Okay. I can explain it, even if we don't know the exact words. But basically, according to Rav Meir, look, I'm giving a machzitz a shekel. So first of all, 1 surcharge, because the Torah says so, like we just got done explaining. According to Rav Meir, every machzitz a shekel needs the kalbon surcharge, period. So therefore, one of the kalbons are totally explainable. But the Mishnah says 2 kalbons. Why 2 kalbons? Because I'm giving a selah, and I'm getting a machitzas a shekel in exchange. There was a money change done. In other words, and I was involved in the money change. So Rav Meir says a second kalbon for the services of the money change. Because there may be, on that transfer of, I gave a selah and I got machitzas a shekel, there may be a possible loss. And so therefore you have to pay kabban as well. Otherwise stated, Rabbi Meir is also concerned about financial loss as well. Meaning, in addition to his general position where you always have to give a kabban, because every machitzas a shekel requires a kabban, but in these circumstances you have to look at the possibility that there may be a potential loss, and therefore you have to pay an additional kabban. That is one way to understand our Mishnah. Simply put, our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir. That is Rebbe Lazar's opinion. Titania will enter a brisa back to the Gemara. Elu chayav mekaban kaban echad Rebbe Meir Amar beis kabanos. Fine. That is all one possible way to understand our Mishnah. Another possible way, Amar Rav. Right. I know it says Mar Rav. Right. You'll see a lot of times in the Yerushalmi, first letters just get swallowed. Amar Rav divrei hakol he. No, it's everybody's opinion. Not just Rabbi Meir's opinion, but the Tanakhama would agree as well. Dama Rabbi Meir, Echad Shekel Shunosim, Echad Shekel Shunotel, Ve'echel Adivrei Torah. So, okay. Now, this is going to be hard. Meaning, how is the Chachamim going to say in this situation that you have to pay 2 kalbanos? Right? Follow. Ben and I came in yesterday, and we brought in 1 selah. And what did the Tanakhama say? We only have to bring 1 kalbon. because of the possible loss to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, if I'm one individual and I give a seller and I get back a machzis a shekel in exchange, I have to pay two carbons. So to say that the Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir, that was fine, because Rabbi Meir had two surcharges. One for because the Torah said so, and two because of the possible loss. But if we're going like the Tanakhama, why do two people have to pay one surcharge and one person has to pay two surcharges? That's difficult to understand. So basically, once again, Tiklin Chaditin, I'm going to just paraphrase. So he suggests that the reason why it's going to be two surcharges is because basically the way we're going to view it as two transactions. Meaning when I give the seller, that's one transaction. When I get a machzis shekel back, that's a second transaction. Now I know in terms of bookkeeping, that's not normally how we view it. Meaning we're just viewing it as me. All I'm doing is paying my machzis a shekel. But just to explain this line of the Mishnah, and to say that it's also going like the Tanakhama, so perhaps what we're going to say here is that, to explain Rav's viewpoint, is that we're viewing it as two transactions. I'm giving him a seller, that's one transaction, surcharge. I'm taking back a machzis a shekel, that's a second transaction, second surcharge.
You can look at this as a verse of the temple coin as an opportunity lost, because when a temple gives you a machzis a shekel back, that's a machzis a shekel that they could have sold to somebody else and gotten a carbon based on that.
That could be a very reasonable way to explain it. Now, al date the Rav, now the Gemara says, now if Rav is right, yes, so let's just bring him to his correct conclusion. Right, but
even with what he's saying,
right, the way I'm presenting it, you know, the way we're counting that even when one person is just paying, going to count that as two transactions. All right, look, it's hard, it's difficult. The aldate derav gimel kabanus inun. So the Gemara says, according to Rav, it comes out now that under certain circumstances, three kabbans will be charged. Also, Rav Yirmiya, Rabbi Shmuel, Rav Yitzchak, B'shem Rav, Shlosh Kabbanos, Inon, Echa Shel Koshu Notzim, Echa Shel Koshu Notzim, Echa LeDivrei Torah. Meaning, if Rav's thought process is correct, and we go like Rabbi Meir, so now on me giving my seller, I'm going to have to pay three kabbans. One, because I gave a seller, which is going to need to be divided. Two, because I took back a machatzis a shekel, a second transaction. I got to pay a surcharge on that. Three, because according to Rav Meir, every machatzis a shekel donation also needs a kalbon as well. So if you take Rav's thought process and you plug it into Rabbi Meir, so then what would come out is that you would have to give three kalbons. Okay? Fine. Okay. Well, we go over what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah, and that is the following. We're talking about an estate. Dad dies, dad leaves an estate. And there are a bunch of brothers there who are right now, who inherited. If the estate goes right now at this point in time undivided, and therefore it's just simply an entity in of itself, and the estate is paying for our machatzis, it's a shekel, so there's no kabon requirement. Why? Because we learned yesterday. When you're being sponsored by somebody else, there's no kabon requirement. It's waived when you're being sponsored. So the estate, when it's not yet divided, is viewed as its own entity, paying for you, therefore there's no kabon requirement. However, if the estate is divided amongst the brothers, so now the brothers and the brothers pull the monies back together again. At that point in time, it's no longer viewed as an estate. It's viewed as a partnership. And therefore, we have to, if we're going to dip into the company to pay for our machzis shekel, we have to pay for the search. We have to pay the search of the kabon as well. Okay, that's what we learned in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara is going to be even more detailed in terms of when do we view the estate as being divided reformed again, versus sometimes we're not going to view the estate as ever being divided. So the Gemara explains, Amar Rabbi Elazar, V'hein shechalku gedim keneged tayashim, v'tayashim keneged gedim. Aval im chalku gedim keneged gedim, v'tayashim keneged tayashim, hu chalko mishah harishona. Rabbi Elazar makes the following argument. It's an interesting argument, and it goes like this. If let's say the brothers divide the estate, and what basically the brothers say, look, let's sit down, let's work it out. Okay, that goat over there, you have the goat. And because you get the goat, I'll take the cow. Now, okay, I understand, that's not fair. You'll get two goats, I'll get one cow. In other words, and now we're really cutting up the estate, and it's not, right, we're going to just simply take portions, but we're really exchanging with one another. And it's clear because we're exchanging different items, different type items, so that now the estate is dissolved, and if we put the monies back together again, that's a new entity. Good. However, says Rebbe Elazar, if let's say, here, the two brothers, okay, and let's just leave Bechor out of the whole discussion, let's just make it simple. There are two brothers, there's six sheep, you'll get three sheep, I'll get three sheep. What are the four cows? You'll get two cows, I'll get two cows. So what Rebbe Elazar argues then is that the estate was never dissolved. That is, in other words, even though we are, in other words, which sheep is mine? That one over there. And that cow is mine, but the estate is never dissolved. And we view the property as still the original estate. This is Rebbe Elazar's argument.
Based on that, why is it not dissolved if they're dividing it already?
Because
they're making a claim on it.
Right. So the Gemara doesn't say this. The Tiklun Chatan explains. This is based on the concept of Breira. Breira tells us that if all we're doing is just splitting up the cows and splitting up the sheep, so basically what we're saying is this was the estate not only now, but going back to the original. You see, you can't say that if we're exchanging cows for sheep, and we're taking different items and trying to appraise and value, and I'll take this and you'll take that. But if all we're doing is just drawing a line, so that line goes retroactive to the time of the death of the father, and so therefore it's all viewed as the original state. Consequently, according to Rebbe Elazar, even if we're using those monies now, even after the division, to pay for a machias as a shekel, what Rebbe Elazar wants to argue is, that's not me paying, that's still the estate paying, and therefore I don't have to pay the kalma.
Where does he get Breira from? I thought there was no Breira.
Well, first of all, we know in the Bavli, it's a machlokas. So Rebbe Elazar is obviously going to take the position that that yesh Breira.
He's contending that this is Darabbanan, this concept is Darabbanan that he's pushing Breira.
Sounds like Daraisa, because if... I guess it depends how the kalma should be viewed, as whether it's a Darabbanan or Daraisa. Okay. I want to finish the perek. We've got a couple minutes left. Amar Rav Yochanan, afilu chalka gedim keneged gedim, v'tayashim keneged tayashim, kelekuchos heinu p'turim min ha'maaser. And Rav Yochanan says, no, it doesn't work that way. Anytime that the estate gets divided amongst the brothers, and even if it's a very simple division, and even if all we're doing is saying, six sheep, you get three, I get three, four cows, you get two, I get two, it is viewed as a dissolvement of the estate. All the monies now in my possession are considered my money. If we decide to pool our monies together, it's now a partnership. It's not just simply a reconstitution of the estate or the original estate. Rav Yochanan says, no. Once monies get divided, the estate is dissolved, period. And then he quotes the Mishnah, and the Mishnah says that once you are gifted or you purchase an animal, you're exempt from Maisa Behema. Here too, once the estate is no longer the estate, but now you're taking possession of it, it's no longer considered the original estate, and if we decide to pool our monies together, we have formed a new partnership. On the kalbon, we have to pay the kalbon. On the Maiser Behema, partners don't have to pay Maiser Behema. We're on the very bottom of Dalam and Beis. We're about to start the next Amud. Rabbi Chia Amar, Rabbi Yirmiya, Bai V'lama Leislan Amarn Pamim Shein Chayavim Uvezeh Uvezeh Pamim Shein Peter Mizeh Mizeh. Now the way the Mishnah formulates it, they're like totally mutually exclusive. If you're paying the Kalbon, you're exempt from Maaser Behema. If you're obligated to Maaser Behema, you're exempt from the Kalbon. We could form a case where you'll be exempt on both, and we could form a case where you're going to be obligated on both. And the way we're going to form it is very simple. The estate is not just animals. The estate is a combination. It's a blend of animals and money. And so the Gemara says, look, hey Chavida, and now we get to skip the parentheses. We're now four lines down from the top. If the monies get divided and the animals don't get divided, so now you're obligated to the kalbon, because when you're paying your machas as a shekel, you're paying with your money. Therefore, you're obligated. And since the animals were divided, so therefore when we reformed and reconstituted, it's a partnership, and therefore we're going to be. Sorry. The animals were not divided, and therefore the animals are not going to be obligated. The animals will be obligated by Meister Behema. Chayav Bezeh Bezeh. Chilko Behema Velo Chilko Nechasim, and we'll just go the other way. Meaning that the animals were divided, but the money was not divided, so Peter Mizeh Mizeh, then there's going to be an exemption from both. So why doesn't the Mishnah give us all different permutations? Answers the Gemara very simply. Amar Rabbi Mena Hadat De Amart Bishlo Haisa Behema Rov Aval Im Haisa Behema Rov Hein Hein Ikar Nechasim. We're just dealing with a scenario where the animals represented the majority of the estate, so we're just dealing with a very simple case where the estate is the animals, or at least the majority of the animals. Rabbi Avin Amar Rabbi Shima Bai Mimnei Shasisim Ka Adam Echad Eitzel Meister Behema At Pocho Min Akalbon. So he says, I don't understand. You're really going to exempt him from the kabon? Amar lei lo shnayihi? Of course, the answer is, yeah. You don't think it's different? Meaning, it's the estate that's paying. And because it's the estate that's paying, we're going to be exempt from the kabon. And the Gemara says, and once we assume ownership of that money, once the estate gets divided, and even though we're going to pool our assets together, it's no longer an estate, it's now a partnership, and we don't have to pay the money. And we will have to pay the kabon surcharge. Finishing up the perek, Rabbi Abba b'shem Abba bar Rav Huna, hishnei achim shiyashu es avim, hishnei gisim shiyushu es chamehem. Now the way the Gon understands that this is an answer, meaning that it's when the brothers pool their monies together again, it'd be no different than brother-in-laws pooling their money together again. Meaning when brother-in-laws pooling their money, it's obviously a partnership. But the same thing is true when brothers pool their money back together again. Even though they assumed ownership of various assets of the estate, and they put their monies back together again, that's not considered a reconstitution of the estate. It's just simply a new entity. It's a corporation. And finally, last question of the perek. We're going to finish the perek. Where did the kabbonis go? Meaning, okay, good. So now the Beis HaMikdash had a windfall. Right, another source of revenue, meaning the machitz is a shekel and the surcharge. What is it? The machitz is a shekel. We're going to be spending the rest of the masech talking about where that money goes and how that money is distributed. Where does the surcharge money go? Rabbi Meir Omer Lishkalim. Rabbi Meir says, shekel. Perfect. Yeah, we get it. Because according to Rabbi Meir, what is the kabon? It's basically the shekel. The kabon and the shekel are one and the same. Okay, right. Coin of fire. We're making up for the possible the metal content. In other words, with the kabon is the shekel. It's the same. So wherever the shekel goes, the kabon goes as well. Rabbi Lazar Omer LeNadava. Rabbi Lazar says no. It goes to the nadava. That is a pushka in the Beis HaMikdash that's used for kabonis during the dry season. Rabbi Shimon Shazuri Omer Riku Azav Itzipul LeBeis Kadosh HaKadoshim. Gold plating for the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, obviously, that's not the coin because the coin is silver. But in other words, it will be used to buy gold plating for the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Benazir Omer Shulchanazir Yenot Lenosam Bischaram. Benazir says, no, the money doesn't go to the Beis HaMikdash. It goes to the money changers who are doing this as a service for the Beis HaMikdash. They're not charging the Beis HaMikdash. Give them some revenue. That's a surcharge. And some say, what's it called? Airfare. Not airfare. But travel expenses. Travel expenses for the money changers who are going out to the Medina in order to collect money. Again, same basic idea. They need to be reimbursed for the travel expenses. Another possible suggestion amongst the Brises. Hajjalach Perech Be'echad Ba'adar. That is the end of the first Perech of Shkalim.